This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msbnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Rob Payton, he joins us every single week, and he joins us courtesy of Craneworks.
Lift it, load it, grade it, grind it, move it, haul it, rig it, dig it, Craneworks, Craneworks, yeah, the big dog's got it.
Rob Payton on Three Man Front is brought to you by Craneworks. Lift it, buy it, rent it, the big dog's got it. And now, Rob Payton.
Rob joins us on the Mick Ultra Organic Seltzer Hotline. Dr. Pate, hope you're doing well. I don't know if word was traveling fast around the Auburn community where you live last night that the scoreboard was running out of lights there for the Auburn baseball score against Alabama A&M.
Yeah, I heard y'all talking about that. I think the reason why they kept the game going was because they actually played Tuesday night as well. And on Tuesday night, the Alabama A&M coach did invoke the mercy rule. He just walked out at the end of the seventh inning and just kind of said, hey, we're done. We'll see y'all tomorrow. And so that kind of, I think, left everybody. I mean, I don't think it was expected that that was going to take place. I'm not sure what the score of that game was at the time, but I know it wasn't 33-0. It wasn't that lopsided. So I think he just didn't want to have to do that twice. So, either way, it was that's a lot of runs, a lot of hits. It kind of reminds me of maybe like a Jefferson County high school baseball tournament, kind of Irwin Homewood type of a matchup where we used to put the smack down on you guys.
Oh, okay.
There it is.
I'll never forget Cole striking out and going over to our bullpen and taking a cinder block and smashing it up against the dugout and our coach being pissed off with that.
Actually, but, went through the fence, not the dugout.
I just remember you guys had bat girls, which was unbelievable, and they were pretty good looking too. I mean, you guys and one of them was I guess girlfriend with a guy that came to Auburn to play baseball, and I just remember him coming up to bat, and he hadn't really done anything against us and. We didn't have a very big field at Irwin. It was 350 in center, 300 down the lines. And I just remember that girl stepping up at the edge of the because I was playing first base over there next to your dugout. And she stepped up to the edge of the dugout, and she said, hit a home run, Alex. And sure enough, he cranked one up to our girls' gym up on top of the hill, probably 450 feet.
I remember that one. Hey, we were talking yesterday, Rob, about facilities and how nice they are and everything. And Pat had a question, and Pat ponders. He's like, what's the worst facility that you've been in the SEC? And my answer was our home locker room when I first got to Auburn at the stadium. I'm pretty sure you were there for a year before they redid it. But I told the guys, I said, we got to get Rob to just kind of revisit the condition of our home locker room at Jordan-Hare Stadium. Early in our career,
they redid the stadium. They redid that, I think, before our junior, maybe our senior year. So we had those conditions for 2 or 3 years, but the visiting locker room was even worse than ours. So it was there just wasn't a lot of room. There was, you know, you had to share lockers with guys, the poor guys that were kickers. God forbid you were a walk-on. They had you in the shower dressing out. You had no locker to sit down in. It was not good. I mean, it was pretty well the worst in the SEC. I think that it had some challengers strongly as far as getting to and from the field. I thought that Mississippi State was always a poor design. So many guys would fall trying to walk down that that little. Pathway that they had with that smooth concrete, they had a slant that created problems. I remember Arkansas was in the middle of renovations when we went there, and so we had to walk down a street and across the street to a different building to get into the locker rooms. And but there were some good ones too. You know,
I tried to explain to the guys in a break how. The bathroom stalls did not have doors, and so we would have to tie up towels to when guys would have to use the restroom. So the rest of the 75 players that dressed out weren't just walking by watching you sitting on the toilet.
Yeah, Yeah, and I'm sure that we probably got cussed out for ruining a perfectly good towel for that kind of thing, too.
Rob, you'll love this. So we had this big debate on Monday about, like, framing jerseys and how much it costs, the whole thing. That's total side discussion. But after the show, I was sitting around talking to my wife, and she's like, you know what? Where you played every year. Like, where are the rest of your jerseys? And, I mean, I just started dying laughing. Like, I'm lucky that I was able to steal these. And get
right.
These out of there, and I'll be able to give these to my kids one day. I'm sorry I didn't get 7 jerseys for every season I played. There's no way that the equipment staff was going to let that happen. She's like, they didn't give them to you? And I'm like, no, they didn't give them to us.
There was nothing that was as demoralizing and dehumanizing as seeing your stuff on a rack for the general public to walk into your locker room and just kind of sift through and take from your equipment staff for a price. And yet, you know, you get cussed out because you don't have long socks to wear in a game. So you cut the feet out of a pair to pull them up over your calves. And, you know, you get cussed out for that. So yeah, your stuff was on eBay or, on some sort of local, marketplace that, Frank Cox had devised that, was a pretty good Christmas bonus for him, I believe.
All right, speaking of jerseys, because Cole's in the market trying to get 2 of his jerseys obviously framed and mounted, you know, really nicely done for his office. Do you have your Auburn jerseys mounted and framed in your office?
Yeah, I've got a little shadow box type of that's got one of my jerseys. It's got a picture from, I believe, one of the programs. And then it's got the gloves that I wore in one of our games. It's got a set of wristbands in it that I wore. I used to write the initials BT on my wristbands for a man that I was close with that we went to church together, a man named Brian Tribble that was murdered right before my 5th game at Auburn. I had actually come to Auburn for the first time to watch a game the weekend we played Central Florida. A big Alabama guy, but, a bigger Rob Pate fan. And, so unbelievably, I actually received a letter in the mail talking about his Auburn experience and how much he enjoyed his time in Auburn for the first time. And I received it after he had died. And so I used to just to remember him, to honor him, write his initials up until the point that the NCAA said that, no initials, no markings, none of that kind of stuff would be allowed. At some point, the equipment staff and the coaching staff put an end to that. But so I've got those in a case, and it's in my office. And I also have my jersey with the Chargers. I stole, like you said, Cole, when I was released, I stole my jersey, stole my playbook, stole my nameplate in my locker, all that kind of stuff. So I've got all that too.
Former Auburn defensive back Rob Pate joining us courtesy of Craneworks on the Make Ultra Organic Seltzer Hotline. Rob, as we have a spring ball cranking up, the first spring under Brian Harsin, Auburn's new head coach, what are some of the things you're looking for in spring? And I know it's limited, some of the things that we'll be able to know and be able to tell and won't know some of those things until the fall. But initially, just on the surface, what are some things that Rob is looking for under Brian Harsin and this new coaching staff?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing we're already seeing some of it, guys, and it's culture. You know, it's just how are these guys accepting of their new coaches? Because that's half the battle, I think, when you go through a coaching change. Is do these older guys, are they going to buy in? And is it are these coaches going to have to pull teeth and really kind of buy their time until some of these older guys that were closer to their previous coaches that have maybe learned the habits, whether they're good or bad, from the previous staff, can we break them of that? The younger guys will run through a brick wall for anybody. They don't know any different, but the older guys do. And so what's the length of time that it takes for complete buy-in? Obviously, they've got some position needs that they're going to have to shore up. They got a lot of guys returning on the offensive line, but we're talking about a group that of guys that struggled last year, that couldn't stay healthy, never really gelled well, and so that's got to be priority number one. I mean, we've got to be able to run the football and protect the quarterback, and we just didn't do a great job with that. I like the fact that Auburn has really pretty much inundated their staff with coordinators. I mean, we have a former offensive coordinator now that is just an analyst. We've got an offensive line coach that is a tight ends coach. You know, so he's taken he has elevated the off the field positions as well as really made an onus on being able to elevate the play of the offensive line. And you can see that with the way that they're recruiting now. They're offering guys earlier. They're making identifications on players much faster than the Malzahn regime did. And just talking to guys and on the team, you know, in the community, they really like what they're getting from this coaching staff. The energy, the enthusiasm, the fact that Coach Harsin's participating in some of the things that they do, that just creates a drive and a motivation and can tie a team together in ways that you just can't really describe. So I think it's those things, but from a personnel perspective, got to solve the offensive line.
I mean, I was going to ask you what you thought about, you've seen some of the videos floating around, Brian Harsin out there actually directing winter workout drills. Just, what would you think about that if you were a player?
I mean, could you imagine Terry Bowden or Tommy Tuberville directing? I mean, Tommy Tuberville brought his son to our workouts when he was a little guy, probably five. And he ran us until the little kid got sick and tired of watching us puke, or it was going to be too late to drop him off at school without a tardy note. So, no, I mean, I can't imagine any of those guys doing that. I mean, Bill Oliver actually got us out of winter workouts my sophomore year.
Speak for yourself. We had our own winter workouts in the locker room, by the way.
Oh, man.
Set up cones, ladders, and box jumps in the locker room.
Well, I think it's important, Cole, just so that these guys see the competitive nature of their coach. You know, anytime you have a guy that you can look at and say, hey, not only is that guy asking me to do things that he's willing to do himself, but, you know, he understands what we're going through. He's played at a high level. He knows the pressure and the weight of what it feels like to carry the expectations of a program. When you have coaches that you look at their, you know, you look down at kind of their references and their biography and you see them play at a, you know, Wesleyan Christian Academy of the Northeast, and you're like, yeah, he punted at Fork, you know, Grand Valley State, you know, and it's like, there's something about that when you say, hey, this guy played defensive tackle at Clemson and he played in the NFL for 10 years. Hey, this guy, you know, was a tight end in Alabama, or this guy was a quarterback in Georgia. I mean, you can roll with that. And you're gonna believe and have a faster buy-in with people that you know speak the same language, went through the same experience, understand what you're going through. I just think that's big, and I'm glad that they brought in a lot of coaches that have that characteristic. But he also melded that well with people that know the landscape of the SEC, people that have played at Auburn, and people that know what he requires in his program that were close to him at Boise. So I think he did a good job with building a quality staff in that way.
I wanted to ask you a basketball question. It's about Auburn. It's about Sharif Cooper. Obviously, he was injured, was unable to play the other night. It's a big question mark whether he's going to be seen again in an Auburn uniform this season or even next year. If you're advising Sharif Cooper based on the things you're hearing about a potential NBA lottery choice, do you think Sharif Cooper has played his last game as an Auburn Tiger?
Well, I mean, if he were my son and he was going to be drafted at that high, then yeah. I mean, I would tell him to go and you know, fulfill your dream. I mean, that's why prolong it if you've already reached the status that, you know, that the NBA believes that you can fulfill. At the same time, I don't think he's the typical, everyday, prospect in that, you know, a lot of these guys have family needs that push them to go ahead and take that step. I don't think that he's a guy that has to do that. I think he's a guy that was screwed out of half of a season from the NCAA, I guess, for being a wealthy black kid. I'm not sure exactly what the reasoning was. I don't think anybody ever said, but I don't see a lot of wealthy white kids from Duke that sit out with dads that are attorneys or agents or things like that that don't get to play. But you know, you get a prize recruit, a McDonald's All-American that decides to go to Auburn, and we're going to sit that kid down for 15, 20 games. You know, so maybe he feels slighted from that. Maybe he looks at the roster coming back and says, hey, I get a chance to play with some of the best talent in America. I think we could go far. Those guys just never got to play well, you know, get play together. They never were a complete team. As soon as Sharif came back, Justin Powell was gone. Turbo had transferred early on in the season. So it was just an uphill battle from the outset. But it's a young team that I think that nobody will want to play next season. And they're going to upgrade at a lot of different positions. And, you know, it just depends on whether or not he wants to have that college experience, make a run in the NCAA tournament, or if he says, you know, my ultimate goal was to go play in the NBA. They're giving me that shot. You know, what's the difference in, you know, maybe increasing my ability to be drafted one or two slots higher? They'll have to make that decision as a family, but it'll be interesting to see what he says.
I want to apologize to you on the air, Rob. I think we're going to have to go back to Crane Works and just ask if we could get someone a little more opinionated on the show every week. And it's just not afraid to speak their mind here a little bit. It's getting a little vanilla. So,
well, I mean, is that you know, to me that's pretty obvious. I mean, maybe we can beat around the bush, or I mean, we can make excuses for people, but I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, that was just a sad state of affairs, and to never really get an explanation for it, other than just, okay, yeah, you're cleared now. I mean, you paid your penance, you signed with Auburn, then you know, now go out and have a nice season. I just don't get it.
By the way, going back to the college baseball discussion, Auburn winning 33-0, the largest margin of victory in college baseball history came back in 1999. Nebraska beat Chicago State 50-3 in college baseball. 50-3.
Wow.
Yeah, the more you know.
Man.
Rob, you join us every single week, and you join us courtesy of our friends at Craneworks.
I do, and Craneworks has offices in Birmingham, Mobile, and Nashville. Been serving the Southeast for over 30 years, and you know, if you've got a job where it's going to require rental equipment, you need to make a heavy lift, then you're doing yourself a disservice to not call the best in the business to get that done. So if you need a crane service, equipment rental, you're planning a lift, or whatever your next project may be, then let those guys do it efficiently. Let them get it done correctly. And always have the Rental Works division that has the most experienced and trained operators for any equipment that that you could need. So give the big dog a call or visit them over at craneworks.com.
Really good stuff. Rob, we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Take care, guys. War Eagle.
Rob Pate joining us courtesy of Craneworks on the Mick Ultra Organic Seltzer Hotline with zero sugar, zero carbs, and only 80 calories. Try cucumber, lime, peach, pear, or spicy pineapple.
This is Three Man Fronts.